Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
You look very toit.
That's right. It is the Migs cast.
I am your swole Steve Migs.
Swole.
Toit like a tiger. Toit like a tiger.
With the Reverend Fuego.
Hi.
And Glenn Cannon's back.
Whoa. Hey, guys.
Ah, we missed you.
I missed you guys too, man.
I know. We needed an entire group of people in here
again.
To cover for you.
Again, we
I got
two
to listen
bands.
To that show. I did go listen. And thanks for all the cool stuff you said at the beginning of the show about the record. That meant the world to me, guys.
We would have never said it if you were here.
I know. No. We'd have been talking about the other stuff.
God damn, right? Dude. That record's so good. It's
thank you.
Seriously.
It's legit one of those records, and I mean this is like, this is all of my favorite records. I really dug at first, and then they consistently get better with each listen.
Dude.
And that's what you've got, because you've got so many layers that I'm not even really noticing the first listen or the second listen. I'm like, oh, dude, the bongos right there. It's a Tommy, right?
Yeah, Tommy, San Logos.
Those are freaking rad.
San Vallejos.
But with each listen, I get so used to other parts of the song that I can then zone in on like these other layers, and it's a great listen from beginning to end. I truly, truly love your record.
It means a lot. You guys know I was wigging. I even put a thing up.
I know you like had a precursor of like...
I was wigging.
It was a disclaimer.
Well, it was one of those things where...
Yeah, it really was.
I had all these reasons in my head why I wasn't going to release it, and then I straight up went, you're just... Oh, sorry.
Dude, wow.
Whoa, it has been
Somebody
didn't bring his soap to wash his mouth with.
Wow.
I literally just went.
I see how it's going to be.
You're just effing scared.
Yeah.
You are effing scared.
Yeah, because this is your name.
This is not Windowpane. It's very different.
Yep.
Well, on that note, the wife, she listened to it, and I have to agree with what she said. It's obviously not Windowpane. There's so many different layers to it, and not to detract from Windowpane, but there's a lot of different things going on with it. But it's still you.
Yeah.
Just as Windowpane was you with everyone else, this is still you. So if
with
you
a
like,
different group of people.
Yeah. If you like Windowpane,
you should like this.
And I really do. It's a really fun drive. Driving in your car.
That's where I listen to it. Well, that's where I do all my listening. But now that I have it on Bandcamp where I can like listen sequentially and not have to hit, you know, bounce around and all that. It's such a fun beginning to end listen. And BJ, of all people, when you put up that big post.
Oh, dude, he put an amazing comment on my Kickstarter page.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that he did that, but he brought it up. He goes, dude, I didn't know how deep Glenn is and how, like, in his own thoughts.
I'm a mess.
Well, BJ is, as all of us are, but I don't think, you know, he always sees you as this confident rock star.
Hell, he
clearly doesn't listen to our podcast.
Yeah, right, right, yeah.
Because I think he'd have a different opinion of all three of us.
Yeah, I'm a scared child, man.
But you also play the part of a rock star very well. When you're on stage, you have confidence.
You do, man. You do. You exude rock star status when you're up on stage.
All right, look, actually, Steve, with your wrestling, I bet that you can really relate to this. When I'm on stage, I don't have to be Glenn.
You're a character.
Yes. I literally, Glenn goes away and I'm free of him.
Yes.
And it's part of why I love playing music, because I don't have to carry all the baggage of this person that I share skin with.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
No, it does. It does.
And when we see it with radio, too.
Dude, when you
get to be the character of you. But just the quote unquote best parts.
Well, yeah, all my doubts, insecure. It's my Tyler Durden.
Yep.
Like,
That's funny. Yeah.
I go away. I don't have to feel any of the stuff that I feel before I get on stage and after I come on stage. It all comes back. And that's why.
Sure.
That's why I think I had such a substance abuse problem for so long, is because the only way I knew how to deal with that yin and yang was to dilute it with drugs and alcohol.
Well, if you read so
many. That's the truth, man, because I was really a basket case, but yeah.
If you read so many biographies about musicians, Steven Adler, anyone, like the highs of being on stage, you try and replace it because that's the one moment in your day where you feel on top of the world.
All that insecurity, all that doubt, all those questions, all the one time so-and-so hurt your feeling in the fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you carry that. You carry that, right? But when I get on stage to play, all that goes away. And so it makes sense, like, you know, that's what people think I am, but man, I'm really not.
Yeah, so I think it was cool for BJ to see the other side of you.
Yeah.
You know, I think, because I know it, you know, not like he ever thought anything negative about you.
No,
he always loved you, but now it's like he got to see a personal side of you that he never got to see. And you're absolutely right with the wrestling stuff, man. It's like when people are giving me, dude, it's tough, man, because obviously I know where I am at my age. I'm 44. Around there?
Don't worry, man. That's 43
or 44. I'm 43 or 44.
That's a new 25, bro.
Figure out the math. So I know my days are limited. And also, I should not be doing it at this point in my life. I mean, you watch like The Wrestlers, which is a great documentary series on Vice.
I disagree with both of those statements, though.
I do, too. Okay, I say them as an outsider who makes the opinion about me.
I understand.
And like a guy like MVP, who's around my age, he's about to call it quits. Now, granted, he's also had so many years of doing this to himself. I've only had a couple.
Yeah.
So my bump count, as they call it, is very low compared to a guy who's been doing it for 20 years.
Yeah, right.
But dude, I'm hearing it from people, like, and it's a tough thing because, like, I'm hearing it from my parents. You know, I hung up the phone on them. Like, I legit had a moment where I snapped because every time I talk to them, they take these little pot shots about the wrestling thing.
It's hard.
And it's like, it's always like my mom going, "When are you going to grow up?" kind of things. And so the last
time,
I have no intentions of it.
Yeah, right.
And my mom, we're talking, like, "Do you wrestle this week?" I'm like, "No." "Do you play hockey?" "No." I'm like, "Good. Finally growing up." And I just went, "I don't effing need to hear this." And my wife just like, "What the hell?" She's like, no, don't snap on them. Because she knows, she saw. And I'm like, "You're right." I don't even think they heard that because they're hard of hearing. But I said it. And then I just like, "We got to go. We've got dinner. Love you. Bye." And I hung up the phone. And she's like, "You've never done that to them." I'm like, I hit my breaking point.
But it hurts, man. It's a shame that they don't understand. And that's why they don't support.
And I get they're worried because of the physical nature of wrestling. But dude, that'd be like, don't leave your house.
Because
there's a chance you're getting hurt when you get in your car. There's a chance you're getting hurt when you're riding in an elevator.
When I told my mom I was buying a Harley Davidson, just silence.
Yeah.
And I went, "Look, Mom, it's one of those things where I've always wanted one, and I know this sounds weird, but because of the death of Joel Eggert, that's the reason I'm buying one. I'm going to do this to honor him."
Mm-hmm.
That did not help.
No.
She was like...
I want to ride a motorcycle in honor of a guy who died on his motorcycle.
That's right.
Yeah.
That did not help.
Right.
Yeah.
But...
Wow. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But that's it.
I'm wrestling in honor of my friend who died wrestling.
That was it, man. Same thing. Right? Yeah. You know, yeah. But bless her heart. Because I think... with my life curve, kind of maybe some of the things you're experiencing with your parents right now, I went through early on.
Yeah.
Where it was like, "I'm not going to go to college. I'll be in your local bar playing music, swilling Jack Daniels. What do you think of that?"
Right.
Yeah.
And there was a dark time of, "Oh my God." And then that turned into, they're my biggest fans, right?
Yeah.
And so it's one of those, "We don't want to see you get hurt. Good God, please be careful."
We're worried. I understand that. Yeah.
But they know, they go live your life. And so it was literally like, "Please be careful." And I'm like, "Mom, you know I will." Yeah. And but you know what I mean? It's that. I really,
it's tough because it's, yeah. And it's hard when like my parents are like, oh, we don't want you to do this. You know, when are you going to grow up? Thing really pissed me off because I'm like, wait a second. Do you want me to live my life? And I that's why I had to hang up the phone because I was about to go for the jugular. I have my mom who smoked
live your
her
life
entire
like yours
life.
And
yeah.
Right. Like, do you want me to, like, you're worried about my well-being. My dad is, you know, has a tough time walking right now because he was never healthy. And I'm possibly going to be living the same life as him when I'm his age.
You're becoming
different
you're
reasons.
More athletic now, bro. You're more athletic now than you were a decade.
Gosh, I'm in the best shape of my life.
That's what we were laughing about
that's
when the mics
part.
Came on is literally, I hadn't seen Steve in 2 weeks and I looked over, I'm like, dude,
you look
like
good.
It's starting to show.
I've known you a long time, but it is—it's starting to show, dude.
That's
right, like,
and it's one of those things that just boggles my mind. I mean, I've worked with you for 13 years now, yeah. Which that on itself kind of boggles my mind.
Bro. Yeah.
But looking back at pictures like a decade ago when we had those,
when
and
I was like 270, 280,
yeah,
and now 205.
You weighed more than me,
yeah.
And I'm sticking around at like 260. I can't get rid of this.
I'm with
I
you,
feel
buddy.
Like that. I'm like,
you.
Come on, and it's just like you are in great shape.
I'm trying.
And you're doing a lot of that stuff where it's
because of wrestling that I'm in good shape, though.
Yeah, because
that's the
you
funny
need
part.
To be.
Right.
Like, you have to have...
It's a little bit of the vein thing, because, goal, one, hopefully, by the end of the year, I would like to be able to wrestle without my shirt. I know it sounds silly, but...
that doesn't sound silly.
That's a big motivation. And also, like, look, it's a performance, sure, but you have to look the part. And I don't want to be one of those guys that just looks sloppy out there.
Dude, man, looking good makes you feel good.
It does.
It gives you confidence. I mean, I'm a dude that avoids beaches for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, Glenn, are you coming to the hot tub party?
Nope.
Are you going to the pool? Yeah, with my shirt on.
Yeah. I'll be sitting by the pool sipping a drink, which oddly enough is the whole reason why I can't take my shirt off in public to begin with.
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, I get that.
But it's a hard
I drink
thing.
Because I'm sad, but I'm sad because I drink.
Suspicious cycle. Just keeps going in that circle. Who's going to cut the line?
No one is.
But I'm trying so hard not to say it. I'm like, what is growing up in your eyes? Is growing up how I grew up watching my mom and my dad sit on the couch from the minute they got home to the minute they fell asleep and did nothing active. And didn't even want to do active things with me because that involved being active. Is that growing up or is what I'm doing? Yeah, it's a young man's sport, but I'm taking care of myself. I'm doing, and it makes me happy.
Dude, it's,
I don't
want to
sit
sport.
On my couch and do
you,
nothing.
You make it yours. It's not a young man's sport. It's not a young man's game. You make it yours, dude.
Right, Glenn.
It's like, how old was, everyone, Morgan Freeman, how old was he when he started acting?
I think 50s.
Yeah, he was,
right?
he was older, yeah.
So all of that thinking.
Diamond Dallas Page started wrestling at 35.
That's
really?
What I'm saying, man.
Yep.
All those traditional lines of thought, man, the person who pushes themselves will excel beyond those boundaries that are set by people that have no goddamn imagination.
Well, and that's where I'm at in my 40s. The thing went off where I'm like, I'm done living my life on how others say I should live my life.
Dude, I finally, it's weird too. We've talked about that. All the changes that I've made in the past, it was the same thing.
Yeah.
I went, that's it. I've had it. I've got to put my happiness first and what I want first. And if it alienates people, that's a bummer, but I've got to do this because I was miserable. I was out of my mind depressed.
Yep.
Anxiety and just terrible, man.
And the funny part is that the people that are going to judge you for whatever it is that you decide to make you happy are the miserable ones. And I think what it's what
the
what
ones who won't take that leap.
It's triggering something in their own head. Like, I can't show them, give them validation for what they're doing because it'll remind me of me not being courageous enough to take those chances.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that if someone, but just stop worrying about what others think of you. As long as you're not doing something to hurt people, and by hurt, I mean, like genuinely disrupt somebody's lives.
Well, but it's hard to shed that. I mean, even with tattoos, right?
Yep.
Like the first tattoo I got, it's pretty much my entire right upper arm. Most people don't know it's there because they've usually got a shirt on.
Yeah.
And that was calculated. My parents, man, they love me to death, and I love my folks to death. But out of respect for their wishes, I didn't get tattoos. My first visible tattoo is this one on my right forearm. And
the Zeppelin.
I got it like
this is a couple years
ago. Yeah. And
wow.
I'm in my 40s. But other than usually if I had money, it was spent on hot rods or guitars. But
when you said hot rods, I was about to say hookers. I'm like,
hookers and guitars.
Yeah, everybody.
That's the name of the second Bruiser Brody record.
That's right, hookers and guitars. Yeah. Two things we can't afford.
That's right.
But no, it was out of respect for my parents. And now I don't have a problem with that.
Right.
You know what I mean? But
I have no piercings out of respect to my parents.
That translated
really?
To... Yeah. See, there you go, man. There were things that I did in life for the sake of not letting other people down. for the sake of not wanting to disrupt other people's lives or yep. other people's goals or other people's dreams, even if what I was doing was making me completely miserable, I would continue to do it, like, without question, just because it was what was expected of me. And I think that's something that gets beat into your head maybe by the educational system.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do what's expected of
right.
you.
Right. There's a certain course mm-hmm. of life that you have to follow. Otherwise,
right.
you're this weird outcast that we're all going to judge.
I mean, that's something I think mm-hmm. that needs to be examined as to what we instill in...
Oh, no, you got a phone call.
I thought it was mine.
I know, I panicked too.
What we put into our youth...
Scam, likely.
It should be more, look, you need to be responsible,
yeah.
but you need to be yourself.
Right. Well, it's you brought up Fight Club, and I literally just...
Are we starting one?
No. Okay. I mean, you can if you want to.
Well, we won't talk about
great.
It.
Great. Steve will whip both of us.
I'm good at fake beating you up. I don't know if I can real beat you up.
I was able to watch it again in the theaters. Like, one of the local theaters down in Tacoma had it for their Saturday night movies, and it was that same thing where they're sitting in the bathroom, and Brad Pitt's in the tub, and he's like, yeah, I did my yearly call to my dad.
Right.
And it's like, after I completed college, he's like, I don't know, get a job. And then I did that, and it's like, I don't know.
Get
a wife. Yeah, yeah. And it's
have
like,
kids.
And it's one of those things, it's like, am I doing it just to please you?
Yes.
And it sucks to have to do that or feel obligated to do that at the risk of not being able to do the things you truly want to do.
And a lot of people do follow that course.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the course, right?
Yeah.
And many people end up very happy, but many people end up very sad.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe now culturally, and I think probably only in parts of this country, we're starting to break away from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's nothing, dude, going to college, developing your career, getting married and having kids is awesome.
Yeah.
If that's what you want.
Exactly. Right? You shouldn't have to feel pressured or forced into those.
I've had
peers.
And don't
get weird around someone who doesn't want that.
Oh, yeah.
That's the hard part.
Dude, I have peers. I've really experienced that where it's like, well, we've been married a year. It's time for kids. And I'm like, says who?
Right.
And then immediately like, well, you don't like kids. I'm like, actually, I love kids.
Right.
But I also know that that's not something I want in my life right now. And then once they have their kids, and I'm sorry, some of these couples have ended up really happy. Many of them have ended up very unhappy.
I know some people are like, I didn't realize that this was going
to
be this tough.
Oh, dude. And then I get the, you need to have kids. Why don't you have kids? You need to have kids. And I'm like, wow, man, I don't understand your thinking at all. It's like, I've got cancer, so you should get cancer.
Right.
Like, why?
I like that you've now connected kids to being similar to having cancer.
I don't know, but that's the way it feels. Like, I'm looking at this miserable, broken human being saying, man, you need to have kids. And I'm like, what? It's like, dude, you need to punch yourself in the face. I'm like, doesn't seem to be working too well for you, man.
Right. It's like, this,
you know?
That's like my wife always does. This tastes awful. Try it. I'm like, I'll take your word for it.
Does this smell like Duke to you?
Yeah, does this smell bad?
You know what? If you think it smells bad, I don't need to confirm this.
And I'll tell you, I'll give you one other one, and I won't give his name, but amazing human being, super talented guy.
Let's not talk about Rev.
Excellent father. And we were hanging out, and we got talking about that very thing. And he said, dude, as a father, let me tell you something. And I was like, I love the guy. So, yeah, lay it on me, dude. Tell me all about how I've made a mistake by not having kids.
Right.
And he went, if you're thinking about having kids, don't. And I just went, whoa. And he was like, dude, and I won't even give away the gender of his child. He's like, dude, I love my child. I'm happy as H, et cetera, blah, blah. He's like, I'm telling you right now, if you're thinking about doing it, don't. And I think the reason he said that to me is he saw what I was trying to do with my life, what I was trying to achieve and where I was going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because he was on a similar path that I was on. And when their child came into existence, he did what you should do. He realigned all life priorities for the kid.
Which absolutely. You should,
which is why he's got an amazing marriage, is an amazing father, and is truly, truly happy. But his advice to me was, I see what you're trying to do. You don't want to do this, man. You know what I mean? And I respect it. He's the first father I've ever had say that to me.
That's really cool.
Dude.
Because it's an honest answer then.
Only regarding my life course.
Right. Right.
You know, if he looked at me and be like, dude, honestly, you're kind of making a mistake by now, dude. You really should consider. But he saw what I was trying to accomplish with my life. And he was like, dude, don't. Don't do this.
I'll be perfectly honest, though. Right now, I'm just sitting here while you're talking, envisioning you with the baby Bjorn on stage rocking out with a little toddler with a little headset on.
Baby Brody.
Baby Brody.
Man, kids. kids are kids.
And it would just crack. It just it's cracking me
awesome
up.
Awesome, and there's nothing as rewarding as that. And I was with a girl for a long time and raised her daughter for a number of years.
Yep.
And it was remarkably rewarding. It was a really special time in my life, and I'm glad I got to kind of sample that. And who knows what the future holds, right?
Yeah.
But if it's something you want, that's awesome. If it's not something you want, then it's a mistake. And that's, you know, those the pressures that culture puts on. Even your parents. When are we going to have kids? When are you going to have my mother-in-law. When am I going to get a grandkid? When am I getting a grandkid? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, we have a cat.
Yeah.
Would you like to come visit the cat?
Send her Christmas money.
See, our in-laws are pretty cool about that. They don't do anything like that. It's like my sister who has two daughters, and they're amazing, and they're like, you need to have kids. And I'm like, Do I? I can kind of just, you know, babysit my nieces and nephews, and I'm pretty cool with that.
And in 3 years, man, you might find that you're in a place where you're like, you know what would be awesome? Because, dude, I think about it a lot.
Yeah.
And I know how awesome it would be, but where I'm at right now,
time's not right.
It's not the right time, man. Well, dude, it would be a mistake.
It was like that with us. I mean, both and I went into our marriage saying never, never.
And
then as the marriage went along, we started thinking, wow, that would be a pretty incredible. And then it was like we were both kind of hinting at it, but neither one of us wanted to admit that maybe the original mentality we had of it was different. And then finally she said, look, I get we went into this marriage. And I said I did not want kids, but would you be opposed if that ever happened? I go, absolutely not. She's like, well, why would you say anything? I'm like, well, I'm thinking that
right.
You never wanted one. So And I was fine with that because, you know, we made that decision as a couple that, okay, this is the kind of couple we're going to be. And then over time, we both realized that would be a really cool chapter to add to our lives.
Oh my God,
it would be important.
Right.
Now, I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but if it does, some people have said, like, oh, what are you going to do with this whole wrestling thing? And it's like,
keep doing it.
I'm going to keep doing it. And I want my kid, ideally, I don't think I'll ever, if we did have a kid, it'd be really, that'd be scary to try and keep doing it by the time they're old enough to register what was going on. But I would love to be able to show back videos to my child and be like, look, there is nothing that is stopping you from doing whatever you want to do in your life.
I can picture your
kid. The only person stopping you is you.
Bouncing up and down in the seat watching daddy wrestle. Yeah. I mean, dude, I can picture.
It'd be incredible.
It would be, dude, I remember being a little kid and watching my dad race. You know, actually, I remember the birthday where he flipped the car end over end clear into the.
maybe not those ones.
My mom was so mad at him. It was my sister's 8th birthday.
Happy birthday,
dude! It was bad. But no, I mean, I can, you know, and I remember watching dad do all that stuff, you know, and dude,
that would be the hope.
That's awesome, right? That's incredible, man. And it's interesting you talking about your journey because Tawny and I went into this marriage with no kids. And then finally she was the one that said, hey, look, no kids ever. And I went, okay, I'm at peace with that. I'm totally cool with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then very recently she was like, you know, I think I'm going to go get, you know, fixed, get sorted out.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
And I went, ooh. And she was like, whoa. And I'm like, that feels a little permanent. And she's like, I thought we didn't want. And I literally just said, the thought of limiting anything we could do as a couple feels like a mistake to me.
Yep. It's an interesting point because there's a finality to that. And I mean...
And I was like, do we want kids now? No, but in 3 years? And she's like, our age. I'm like, I don't care about that. It's 2019. I don't care what they say about age. I don't care what
about... There's leaps in technology at this point, too.
I mean, it's riskier. Risky. I know it's risky for the woman. But there I was, and I'm like, man, if you know, this is very, like you said, very final. And I was like, baby, and honestly, it was weird. She kind of lit up, like, oh, she's like, I really thought you'd be like, cool, let's go do it tomorrow.
Yeah,
and
here's
the money. I was like, no, let's not. And it's funny because I think about all my friends that are like, oh, Glenn hates kids. It's like, no,
it's not.
No, I just didn't follow the path, which is what we started this whole rabbit hole down. Like, you know, I went a non-traditional course.
Yeah, and I mean, that's okay. You know?
It is. It needs to be okay.
And it was funny because I was obviously a big wrestling fan. Dean Ambrose, who was in the WWE, he left that, even though they offered him a ridiculous amount of money because he just wasn't happy with the fact that he wasn't able to be creative. It's a really good listen if you ever listen to Chris Jericho's podcast. He goes into his reason for leaving was because everything had to be in the eyes of Vince McMahon. And even if he didn't agree with the creative vision of what Vince had, it didn't matter. He had to do it because he was an employee. And he finally hit a breaking point. He's like, you know what? I don't care. And they even offered him a ridiculous amount of money, and he didn't even open the envelope to see what the offer was. And he's just like, you know what? And he left. He signed with AEW.
I can relate to that on some levels.
And he was like, and all these, he's like, people are like, you know, the funniest connection he made is like, you know, in what's the movie with Herbie the Elf? that wants to be a, or Hermie.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he wanted to be a dentist.
Right. He goes, he wanted to be a dentist. He's like, be an effing dentist. You're an elf, but you could be a dentist. And that was like, I was like, that's a funny but true thing. He's like, yeah. And so now it's been like the meme or whatever going around says, I'm an elf, but I could still be an effing dentist, or you're, you know, be an elf, but also be a dentist.
Yeah, man.
That way, it kind of brings, going back or keeping in the wrestling world, did you see the Joey Ryan speech that he did?
That was great.
It was amazing, but it was him talking about doing it on his own terms and staying in the indie world. Same thing, getting a bunch of money and all this stuff, but at the same point, losing what made him him for this long of a time.
So for just a backstory, Joey Ryan's the guy that flips people with his dong, but that's like his character.
Right,
he's
sure.
The king of sleaze. Okay. Well, he's also super popular. Right? He's ridiculously popular. So some actual companies, rumor has it even WWE, offered him money to sign a contract. And he was just like, he said no because then I have to strip who I am as Joey Ryan. And I don't want to do that because I don't want to be turned into whatever they want to turn me into. And then the best part was, I'm okay with being a big fish in a little pond. Yeah. I'm going to be the biggest effing fish in this little pond. And he says, I choose independent wrestling.
And who knows where that'll
it was awesome, dude.
Who knows where that'll take him, man? Like, who knows where that'll take him?
And he gets to travel the world doing this.
And makes
having
money.
Fun. And makes livable money. Well, yeah, absolutely.
He probably makes more money than some of the mid-tier WWE stars.
Wow, man. Really?
Rumor has it he's doing very well for
good
himself.
Good for him,
I can relate to it because I found myself in a position where window pane became a thing, and then there was the window pane thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And creatively, even before we started that last record, I felt really suffocated and trapped. I wanted to go do other stuff, and it was discussed openly by my bros, my peers, my bandmates, and it was like, yeah, man, that stuff's cool, but it's not right for window pane. And Tony, we've talked about it too, where he's got a lot of the same kind of stuff that just wasn't right, and he felt bound by what window pane was.
Yeah,
I felt bound by what window pane was, and you know that's kind of where I ended up. Where I finally went, you know what, man, I'm in a band that's popular. It's got a large fan base. We've got some unique opportunities in front of us. If we keep just trudging away, maybe we can make X, Y, and Z happen. But I was really unhappy.
I remember, yeah.
And so I just went, you know, and that's part of where all the fear frame came from. I went, I'm going to put that on pause, you know, and I'm going to go down this other road. And remarkably insecure about it because, but, you know, you're talking about this cat that turned down this huge career because he was like, dude, I got to do what makes me happy. Mm-hmm. I got to be who I am.
Yep.
I
got to be fulfilled artistically.
That's what that's literally what I just did. I went, I need to go be who I am, and I can't do it here. And I love you guys, and I love all the fans and all the people that believe in that band. And, man, God, that was a tough. Well, that's why I put that whole dissertation out.
Yep.
I was terrified.
Yeah.
And when I realized just how scared I was, I typed all that up. And then I said, Tawny, come read this. I have her check me on everything because I'm a lunatic. It's wise.
Yeah.
Need an editor.
And she read it, and I was like, should I share this? And she said, you absolutely should.
That's cool.
And I did.
That's a great piece.
And that, well, dude, the responses I got, like even what BJ said,
people learned about you that didn't even know that was going on in your world. And it's relatable because I think a lot of people are afraid of taking that first step.
Yeah.
And I mean, myself included.
But people don't think of you. I mean, people like Steve Miggs or The Rev, they don't think of you as maybe being insecure or filled with self-doubt or questioning every move you make.
If they listen to this podcast, they do that.
Well, that's about it.
But if you listen on the air, that's why I think there's sometimes some the turds in the punch bowl, because some people get bothered by what they think is maybe a confident moment when it's actually the most confident moments I have are my most insecure moments. So I'm like always scared to share them because I'm really proud of it. Like Stone Temple Pilots.
Yeah.
So proud to share that moment on video, but terrified that somebody was going to make fun of something I did wrong on stage. Yeah. If my tempo was too fat. I mean, to the point where I like...
Oh, you destroyed it, by the way.
I watched the video after I edited it and did the tapping of the metronome to see where my beats per minute were. And I'm like, okay, I'm only off by a couple beats per minute compared to how they do it on the studio. And then I went and listened to a live version that they did. And I'm like, oh, he's off more than me. And it was like an insult to him. It was just like, he probably doesn't care. And I'm like overthinking this really, really awesome moment I should be proud of because I'm afraid of that one person that's going to be like, bro, you played it too fast.
They're out there. Dude, trust me. Like,
and they're never going to not be out
there. For me personally, I was so caught up in the moment that I shanked Chorus One.
Yeah.
I did. I shanked it.
Yeah.
And if you listen to it, you can hear me shank it. You can hear him pull me back in the mix a little bit until I get things sorted out, and then there I am again. And yeah. I just thought, way to go, dude. You know, but
if it wasn't, I would have not noticed.
And how many
no
people
one else
are,
would have noticed.
Yeah. Dude, I had a friend of mine, a peer, who's a tremendous vocalist. This was a long time ago when Windowpane did the Neptune Theater, and we had Michael Wilton, Pamela Moore, and Eddie Jackson come out and join us for Jet City Woman
yep.
to close the Windowpane set, which was really cool.
I can't hit the high notes.
Right. So here's me singing Jeff Close. Tate.
Wow.
And yeah. I had been sick. I mean, I got the damn flu.
So you're singing it like this in Jet City Woman.
I got up there. I sang it so hard. Tony's mom said she was worried about me because she could see from the audience my lips were turning blue from lack of oxygen.
Wow.
I was singing that hard because I had been sick.
Yeah.
And I sang and I did it. I pulled it off. But I was pushing so much air and getting so little to myself that I almost fainted. My damn lips turned blue.
Damn, dude.
That's how much I poured into pulling it off. And this guy, who's a friend of mine and a singer, on Facebook, yeah, man, you were working awful hard there on Jet City Woman. You know, you really seemed like you were really, really, really pushing for it, bro.
Turd in the punch bowl.
Yeah, and and I replied, yeah, man, I'd actually just had the flu. But I knew right away what it was, which is basically him going, that's not fair. He's not good enough to be up there singing with those
guys.
Oh,
he wanted to take you down a peg. Oh, yeah. Dude, trust me. I know that.
Because he sings in a very operatic style. Yep. He does.
You got an opportunity I deserved.
That's exactly
so I
want
to knock you down a peg because you can't have that moment.
That's exactly what it was. And
saw with some drummers saying some stuff about me in times. Like even with Bruiser Brody or even Peter Parker back in the days. Like, people want to take shots because they're mad of the opportunities you're getting.
Yeah, it's, you know,
instead of being happy and celebrating it because maybe one day you'll have those opportunities because karma in a weird way does exist.
I gotta believe it's real, right?
You'd hope.
And you know, man, it's people, when they get like that, damn they jerks. Don't consider the fact that, like, you know, you almost hung up on your folks the other day because your mom was like, when are you going to grow up?
Yeah.
And you're like, dude, thanks for that.
Yeah.
Right?
Because so, here I am really happy about what I'm getting to do, and I'd love to share that excitement with my parents,
right.
But I can't.
But these people, dude, that so bad. Bag on you, the turds in your punch bowl, yep. they don't think, they just go, oh, you know, Steve Miggs, top of the world, must be nice.
Right, he doesn't understand my struggle.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Dude, everybody.
Everyone's got a struggle.
Everybody's got a struggle, and their struggle is just as real as yours.
And I mean, I see it a lot with some of the wrestlers, like the big name wrestlers, and what I've been liking to see now is like a lot of them are talking about mental health, and because I think they've lost
That's
too many
cool
of their friends.
I'd like to see more of that in the music community.
I would too. I hope that this is just a swing for all arts, but wrestlers. Jackson Stone is a great national wrestler. He's starting to build his name in the independents, but he's doing a whole series about mental health, not just for wrestlers, just for people in general. And because he lost somebody due to their battles with mental health, and so he's taking that upon himself. And he's a bad guy, like in the wrestling world, he's a heel. But like in his real persona, you're going to see this true side of him, and it's like good. I think more people need to talk like that because. Otherwise, people are just so embarrassed by their mental struggles because they think they're alone. And that's what I love about our podcast is that we do kind of sometimes, we crack a lot of jokes in between it all.
Oh,
but,
sure.
But we're also talking about some stuff that like maybe other people aren't talking about. So there's a chance for you to kind of feel not so alone when you hear us talk about it.
Well, it's good to, you know, I've got a couple friends of mine that are super talented musicians, one of which, has a couple years, the stuff that's opened up for this guy. It's awesome to see him sailing so high, but he battles severe depression and anxiety disorder just like I do. And frequently it's, how you doing? Just out of nowhere, how you doing, man? I'm like, dude, I'm doing really good this week. And it's like that. I'm doing really good this week.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, and how are you? Dude, I'm doing great. I've conquered this. I've battled that. I've been able to keep this in check. Man, that's rad. And that'll be it for a month.
Yep.
And then randomly, how you doing? Because it's like we found each other through all these musicians that know all these. We just kind of found each other and got talking one day, and he was like, oh, you got what I've got. You know?
Yeah.
And again, I think part
of the insecurities.
Yeah, good guy. Like my mother, when she read that thing I put up, called my wife, like, is Glenn okay? Mm-hmm. And Tawny's like, Glenn's actually really good. Glenn's just being honest.
Yep.
And it's
Glenn is good because he feels safe enough to say this.
I didn't feel very safe. I had to have Tawny check it, and then after I posted it, I wigged completely out. But I left it up.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, man, like, especially on social media, I really try to be extraordinarily filtered. Always positive, always happy, always funny, or simply promoting something I'm a part of. I don't get on there and say, I had an anxiety attack today so bad while I was driving, I actually had to pull the car over and scream until I was hoarse. Mm-hmm. How are you?
Yeah.
I don't want to put that out into the world because people will be like, are you okay?
Hashtag
like,
blessed.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Glenn is feeling lucky, the little happy emoji.
I feel great.
But it's one of those like, dude, what's wrong? It's like, nothing's wrong. It was a Tuesday.
Yeah.
I had a bit of a spiral. I suffer from this. I'm mentally imbalanced. And man, I went and had a taco and now I feel great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's
For me, it's a McFlurry.
I get it.
Oh,
I get
dude.
It, right?
Oreo, baby.
Oh, I had a blizzard yesterday.
Yo, okay, real quick aside.
Butterfinger.
If you see me driving and eating a McFlurry, do not comment on my Instagram page that you saw that. Because my wife reads my Instagram page, whoever did that.
Busted.
They're like, dude, I saw you. Like, I posted something that had nothing to do with McFlurries. It was like a picture or something.
Did you really get popped? This is legit?
Yes. Somebody wrote, dude, I just saw you on 167 eating a McFlurry. Granted, it's like at midnight. I just left a wrestling event.
You're like, that was a frozen yogurt. You need to look closer.
I didn't even. I just responded, ha ha. I almost wrote, that was a cup of fruit. And my wife reads this.
Yeah, those were pears.
Oh. And I was in a rental car at the time. Like, how the hell did you spot
you know me?
They know you,
in the
man.
Middle of the night eating a McFlurry.
That's because your stock is rising, Steve.
Bro. I'm like, good thing I don't have like hollering, like I don't have like bitches in the car doing things. It's like, so I'm like, I'd be busted. Like, my wife always laughs. She's like, you would be so easily busted for affairs because all you do is get busted.
I saw
for
you parked in an alley, you know, yeah, exactly, dude. You're eating french fries and getting a Hummer from
so Steve totally saw you deep throating an ice cream cone in the alley. Damn it, don't tell him. My wife now reads that. So please, as a quick aside, if you see me eating ice cream, do not post it on social media, especially Instagram, her favorite social
made
media.
Me snort.
Don't you feel
Twitter
suddenly
is
lucky?
Fine. Twitter is fine. She has no what? Twitter.
Don't you feel suddenly lucky?
A little bit, yeah.
You
I
know?
Don't, like, I mean, yeah. Like, again, you're talking about the rising stock. Mine isn't so high that I'm getting called out on stuff, so I'm pretty happy with that.
In the middle of the night, in a rental car. I thought I could get away with this.
See,
guys.
We're in a good place, dude. I like where we're at, Rev. Let's stay
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Dude, I stay here.
When I saw that, I was like, you have got to be kidding me. I was like,
hide comment.
That was totally me. I didn't.
Well,
I should have.
I picture Steve literally doing the, man, why couldn't you have just left it at, I saw you on 167.
Right. Let's not dime people out.
Right.
Brothers and sisters, look out for each other.
What you need at this point in time is to have just like a coffee mug in your car
right.
that you can just transfer the McFlurry
nah,
or just
man.
Put it inside.
People
like
spot that
it.
Square spoon, dude. They spot that square spoon and you're in trouble.
And there I am driving. With my knees, scooping the ice cream.
This is really good ice cream. I'm having a good time.
You know how hard it is to drive while eating a McFlurry? I don't need people calling me out on it.
Dude, it's almost like, because like Taco Bell's like that. Why do they even have Taco Bell to go? Because if you're not taking it home, you're asking for a goddamn disaster.
Agreed.
You ever try and eat Taco Bell while doing 60
yeah,
miles an
I
hour?
Get, yeah, I get the quesadilla. It's real easy.
That's
to,
a good
does
call.
Does it do okay?
Yeah, because it normally it's perforated, so you can just tear as you're going. You can just
yep. But the soft taco supreme is impossible.
No,
hard taco.
No.
That's why I don't get Taco Bell.
No,
because I'm typically eating fast food in my car.
You got to get it and take it
I'll
home,
get,
dude.
I'll get Taco Time.
Oh, that's right. You can't
Taco Time with the crispy burrito.
Yes. That's exactly where it's going. The crispy bean burrito or the beef burrito because
way
they're basically
go.
Like tubes of meat, crunchy tubes of meat, and they're so easy
they're
to eat
proof.
On the road. Yep. Yeah, they really are.
Nice.
It's like I love that cube chicken, the cube teriyaki chicken sandwich from Subway.
Yeah.
Like when it dice it all up.
Yeah.
Can't eat that
you
while
can't.
Driving.
It goes all over the place.
Because it just starts falling.
Yeah. Crunchy tacos are the worst things in the world.
Fast food wise, unless Tawny and I are doing like something sinful where she's like, let's
so
hit
awesome.
Taco Bell.
Yeah.
But fast food wise, there are healthy options. Like a Jack in the Box, that chicken fajita pita is rad.
Wendy's
but even
has,
those
Wendy's
are dangerous.
Has really good salads, but there's no way in hell that you can eat one of those on the road.
Like no, but the honey mustard grilled chicken wrap that's on the dollar menu. You
really?
Get two of those babies. Oh. They're good and they're like 260 calories. calories.
Yeah. Nice. Good call.
I finally have dominated my... I'm able to eat chicken McNuggets now with the dipping sauce and not have it affect me in my driving.
That's kind of amazing, dude.
Yeah.
I know.
It involves napkins
on
the lap.
He's a goddamn overachiever,
dude. That's years of practice, I believe.
Yeah. And lots of napkins on the lap. Because then if you miss, no big deal.
Yeah.
I would love to like pass Steve in traffic and he's got one of those lobster bibs on.
Bro, it's about to happen. Dude, it's about to happen.
That's the thing, though. Like, I mean, you guys are not bearded individuals. I can't eat on the road and do it slyly.
Because you're the beard?
I will have stuff in my beard and it will just be, and it, at least, you know, it's really, it's a good thing when you and your wife or anybody else are on that relationship level, and you kind of hope with your wife that you would be, where they'd be like, hey, you got stuff all over
Honey,
inside your beard.
There's
you
some
know.
M&M's and sprinkles dried in your beard.
Exactly.
Right. It's like crumbled Oreo cookies in your face.
I don't know. Someone threw Oreos at me.
There's a weird square spoon in your car.
That blew my mind when I finally realized that the spoons are what they use also to mix the McFlurry.
Yeah. So they don't have to touch it.
That's why they have that hole on the top.
Yeah, you clip the square spoon clicks into the thing, and then it goes, and then they disconnect the spoon and they hand it to you.
How excited are you guys tomorrow?
That's the future, man.
The caramel McFlurry is going to be available for a limited time.
Oh, the Stroopwafel.
It's from the Netherlands. They're bringing in some international menu items for just a few till August. And one of the...
McForeigners?
Yeah, so they're doing
yeah, kind of.
In the Netherlands, their McFlurry is a Stroopwafel. It's caramel waffle.
That does sound really good.
Tomorrow, I will try it.
I'm waiting for those loaded fries that they're going to have.
Mm.
Oh, dude.
See, man, I
don't know how good that would be to drive.
I'm not up on all this stuff, dude.
It just came out today.
Yeah.
The Stroopwafel. There's a Canadian one.
I love how he doesn't want to be known, but he's like, did you know what comes out tomorrow? And we're not talking about an Avengers movie. We're talking about a Sunday at McDonald's.
Food.
Dude, check yourself before you rickety wreck yourself.
Look, my wife doesn't listen to the podcast. I can talk about these things freely.
Man, wow.
To quickly go back, though, just about how weird it is with my parents now, to the point where I'm after that conversation, I got so mad because I don't really tell
them. I'm sorry about that. I mean it.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And honestly, dude, there was a weird moment because my wife was mad at me that I kind of sort of hung up on them, even though I did say goodbye and I love them.
She should be getting your back on that.
So I didn't talk to her for the rest of the night. And then the next day we went for a walk with Lulu and she's like, you're mad at me, aren't you? I'm like, yeah, I'm actually pretty mad at you. And she's like, I know why. I was like, yeah. And she's like, well, I didn't know how to handle it. I was like, all you had to say was, you're absolutely right. And I'm like, did you think I was right or wrong when that went down on how I reacted? She goes, no, you were absolutely right. That was awful of them to say that to you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, then why didn't you say that? She's like, I didn't know how to respond. I'm like, well, if you said I'm right, how am I going to get more mad at you? Like, if you're like, babe, you're absolutely right. I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
And then we would have moved on.
How long have you guys been together?
We're coming up on nine years married.
Yeah.
10 years, so 10-ish. A little more than 10 years together.
Like, communication. Like, Tawny and I.
It was a good moment.
Tawny, literally, when I lose it, she will say, I'm sorry, but I don't know what to say to you right now.
And that's fine.
And I will say, there's nothing you can't say, babe. This is something I'm going through. I'm sorry, and this has nothing to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the other day she came home, when I say I had a hard time, oh my God, I had a hell of a time. I was just going to mow the lawn. Dude, I could go into detail because it's kind of funny.
Is this like a sex euphemism or are we talking about
I wish my Peter had gotten caught in the cheese grater.
Giving her the old Stroopwafel?
It was brutal, man.
Time to mow the lawn.
But she came home and I was in a black mood.
Yeah.
And she got out of the car and she's like, hi, baby. And I literally was like, I'm too mad to talk about it.
Yep.
But this has nothing to do with you. And she was like, okay.
Yeah.
And she knew that.
See you later.
She knew that meant, all right, he is pissed at the world. He's not mad at me. So I won't let this affect me on a personal level.
Right. I don't need to argue with him.
And in 15 minutes, he'll come back in. He will explain what happened and he'll apologize for being so pissed. And that's exactly, I came in 15 minutes later. Bless her
heart.
Sorry,
I'm pissy.
By the time I walked in, she was like, you hadn't eaten today. She had made me a sandwich while I was still out there finishing.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And I'm like, baby, thank you.
Instant
I'm like,
boner.
You know, it's one of those things. But I'm like, I'm so sorry you came home to this. And I started to tell her what happened. And she's like, oh, my God. I'm like, but again, this has nothing to do with you. And that's one of those things where in the past, I'd get mad. I wouldn't explain myself. And she would think, he's mad at me. And why? Right?
Right.
That's one of those things. The reason I bring all that up is when Sid says, I didn't know what to say. That's in 5 or 6 years, she'll know what to say. You know what I mean? She'll know what to say. That sounds weird, but...
No, I think this moment will be reflected upon, because it's very rare that I go to bed mad. It's very rare that I'll even admit that I'm that mad. Like, I'll be like, oh, I was a little upset. But I was like, no, I was legit upset and mad at you, because at that moment, I felt the two people that love me, my parents, don't get me and are belittling me. And it's like, I've lived a life of that,
and I hit
a breaking point. Like, that's something that's been an ongoing thing with them, but I think I'm at a point now where I just don't care anymore, and I'm ready to snap, and if it leads to, like, a serious argument, blowout, it's fine, but I just, at that moment, I knew that it would have been weird with my wife right there.
Yep.
So, and then I had my wife who's giving me a hard time for being hurt. So I was like, at that moment, I felt like nobody cared about me.
Yeah.
The three people who care, if
anyone should be on your side... Your wife.
And that's what I told him. Like, if you would have agreed with me, how do I get mad at you? Yeah. Like, it wouldn't have made me, like, any less angry at them. But at least I would have been like, okay, at least I'm not nuts. Because I knew I wasn't nuts for feeling hurt by that. But,
no.
So then I snap at that point. Not at anyone, like, in an angry way. But I go, this is the millennial way of snapping. I go on social media and I blocked my dad from my Facebook like page.
Oh,
I removed him from the MIGScast page. And now, anytime I post anything on my phone, tag him out of it. He's not getting a notification, or he's not able to see. He's hidden from it. So he's still my friend. I'm not going to unfriend my father on Facebook. But if I don't want him to see something, now he's automatically on the list of anyone. Anytime anyone writes something annoying to me on my Facebook page, they instantly go on this list of people who can't see my posts. Because I'm like, if you're going to just be a douche, even though if you think you're just trying to be funny, I don't need that energy.
Oh, yeah,
so you don't get to see
I have a two to three strike policy.
Oh, mine's now one strike.
Mine's one strike now. And
I don't even care.
And I probably would do the same thing with your father, like as you did with your father. But it gets to the point where I'm like looking at, like, I'll see a person's post or I'll see their comments, and it's literally judging. It's like, how long have I known this person? Because most of the time it's just unfriend. It's like, I don't care. Like,
unfriend, delete, block.
Yeah, it's social media. I am no longer caring about...
I don't owe you anything with this.
Exactly. Well,
it's one of those, oh, I've upset you? Here, let me help.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
You'll never hear from me again.
That was one of my... Anyways, I did that to somebody, and he sends me a message back,
why did you delete me?
And I was like, nah.
No, negative.
Because I don't want to deal with it.
The pattern is full, Ghost Rider.
Yeah, the I'm Steve Miggs like page on Facebook, I've never banned anyone. Now I've banned my father.
Well, and that's
very Star Wars of me.
Well, that's funny.
He cut my arm off.
I love it.
Yeah,
but it's like,
screw it, though.
even with all of, like, the station social media pages or the Geek Nation ones, and I flat out told, like, Castle and other people, it's like, if someone is being just blatantly a dick I will ban them.
If somebody
gets mad at them, blame me for it, because I will ban people and I'll say, here are the reasons why, because we don't need that.
No, dude. Yep. You're so, like, on point.
You don't have to be positive all the time on Facebook, and I'm actually kind of happy that people are putting their feelings out there and stuff
I'm fine with that kind of side if you're not positive because you're sharing your innermost feelings, I think that's fantastic.
Absolutely.
I think we need more of that. But
don't bring people down.
Right.
Well, like, straight up douche, or I have a hard time with boo-hoo, poor me. I don't do well with pity. Now, if someone needs... Oh, how do I put that? If you really need help or something terrible's happened, man, you've got my condolences and more than likely my assistance.
Yes.
If I can be there, I'm there. But the boo-hoo, poor me, I don't do pity. Mm-hmm. I don't do the victim thing. Like,
Oh,
life was against me and everything drags me down. It's like, you know what?
When it's the vague posting, that's the stuff that I'm just kind of like, I'll scroll past.
Well, I don't need to worry about that. The pity, because it's one thing to say, man, I broke my leg. Oh my God, dude, this is terrible. Do you need anything? But when 3 months later, it's still, now it's the fifth surgery. And it's like, dude.
Right.
I'm really sorry this happened to you. Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop. You're wallowing in your own sorrow publicly.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to be bummed about it, God, yes, be bummed about it. You'll have my sympathy. But I don't. I'm really weird that way. I have a really low tolerance for pity. I'm a very sympathetic person. Good God. Empathetic to a fault. If I'm around someone that's upset, I'm upset. Their pain becomes mine. Like, I've learned that.
Yeah.
I'm deeply empathetic. If I'm around something that's really, really negative all the time, I take on that negativity. It becomes my problem. I am now angry. So I got to be really careful the people I surround myself with. I learned that very recently. But empathy, sure. Sympathy, sure. But pity.
Yeah.
I have
especially
a hard...
Especially not doing anything to make it better.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You know, so like, yeah.
But so for me, it's like, look, if my wrestling stuff... pisses you off and bothers you that much, all right, I'll make it so you can't see it. And honestly, these days, that's all I use social media for, is to promote my wrestling show. So
I watched a badass video just the other day.
Set to the music of Bruiser Brody.
That was cool. That was super cool.
That was rad. That was a highlight match for
me. Dude, it was like midway through the video when he gets thrown into the chairs.
Dude.
I was like, what is going on?
I got a holy yes moment. That was like one of those moments where it happened. Dude, okay, I'll give you the full, like, behind the music story behind that chair spot, because it's pretty nuts.
Yeah, hook us up.
Because a lot of people, including wrestlers, are like, what the hell were
you
thinking?
If you haven't seen this video, go to Steve's page.
It's on my Instagram. It's on everywhere.
And it was just a play-by-play of his match, and out of the ring, all kinds of, but dude, when you got flipped into that pile of chairs, I was like, dude, what?
Yeah. So the match was me and Officer Cooper.
It was rad.
It was our big blow-off. Him and I have been at each other for months. So we finally were having a one-on-one blow-off match. So,
and this was Miggs, your positive character.
Yes. This is me, the good guy.
Okay.
And
that's what I thought based on what you were wearing.
Yeah. No check marks. No nothing.
I'm still learning.
Yeah. That's okay. I'm a baby face.
Hold my hand, Rave. Hold my
Rave.
Baby
face. Rave. Get away from me.
Sorry.
Baby face Miggs. So
baby face.
It was a big blow-off. So the way the match started, typically you go in the ring, you both face off, you tie up, and then it leads to the match. I come out, as I'm coming out to say hi to everybody, and like my music's playing, he just sneaks up behind me, clubs me, and now that's the start of the match. He's beating the crap out of me.
Damn.
I'm immediately on the defense. Right after that, he throws me into those chairs. So when we're figuring out how the match is going to work, I wanted to do one of those things, because I know anything that I do that involves me putting myself at a little bit of danger is going to blow people's minds, because they don't expect me, the guy that does stuff for radio for a living.
Being thrown from 6-7 feet into the air into several rows of folding chairs, like, how do you plot your landing?
This is the part.
Look, as a guy...
No, it's a good question.
I've been a very, like, I skated for years. I've been a very physical guy for years. I used to, as a point of comedy, I had it down to a science where I could let myself fall like a plank, face forward.
And get that hand...
And right before I'd hit the floor, I'd put my hands up and catch myself. But if you watch me do it,
they call that a face bump.
You'd be like, and so,
yeah,
as a guy that's done that kind of stuff, I watched that and went, how did he?
Yeah, right.
Dude, because she went back first into several rows of folding chairs. It didn't look super scientific to me.
Well, here's the fun part. So when we're plotting out the whole match, I'm like, I want to do this because I know that people are going to react.
It was sick.
But my idea was, you get everyone out of the way. That's why the chairs were empty. Typically, so like, you tell them, move out of the way. And that's like kind of the thing of 3-2-1 battle. You know, when things get near, you get the F out of the way. So I was going to have him just throw me into the chairs where I get thrown and I just barrel into the chairs and just roll around. We're pitching the whole idea, like, we're still, both of us are not green, but we're green enough. And, like, I like chatting with our trainer to be like, hey, these are ideas that we have. So I told him, like, hey, one of the ideas we're going to have is he's going to throw me in the chairs. Any tips on how I could take that without killing myself? No different than when I took a chair to the back or I hit someone in a chair. I went to him and go, hey, any tips? Can you teach me how to do it so it, I know it's going to hurt, but I want to know how to do it properly so I don't really hurt somebody. So he goes, you know what no one has ever done. And that, once you say that to me, I'm like,
ding.
Yeah, Steve's greenlit. He's like, well, you won't be able to say that in about 2 hours.
Yeah. Right. So he's like, you know what nobody's ever done here. And he's like, I've done something similar, and it actually hurts less than what you're going to do if done right. And that's an emphasis foreshadowing. is to be back body dropped into the chairs. And I look at him and go, are you freaking crazy? There's no way in my head. And then all of a sudden.
It's funny.
Like,
that's what I thought when I watched the video of him doing
uh-huh,
it.
Right. Uh-huh. And the dude I'm wrestling against, Cooper's just like, I'm not going to tell you to not do it or do it, because that has to be your decision.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because that's a really dangerous spot. And I'm like, you know what? That might be a game time decision. I got to really think about it. So then this is a couple days before the match. I go online. What's the worst can happen? Which is funny, because while I'm doing that, Cooper's doing the same
thing.
There's
a guy in a powered chair like, no.
Yeah. I once took a backdrop onto chair.
Right.
Now I cannot move.
That's my thing. I'm like, can I get paralyzed from this? Can
and
I die
man
from
is
this?
Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
So I find all these videos.
Stephen Hawking was a wrestler. That's how all that started.
Yeah,
dude.
He took a backdrop onto
some
chairs.
After he destroyed his body, he had to move onto his mind.
Yeah.
Wikipedia. Know? That's a true story.
Overachiever, dude. Another overachiever.
So I'd see that the worst case scenario Mario is landing just straight on the back of the top of the chair,
yeah,
and then just kind of just falling off of it. Like, that seems to be the worst, which I know will hurt really bad, so I don't want to have that happen. But I'm like, so then we have a buddy, B-Boy, who was in town, who's a CZW, which is a crazy wrestling promotion on the East Coast. A lot of guys that have gone to WWE were
it's
there.
It's like Combat Zone, isn't
Combat
it?
Zone. And,
yeah.
But they do some crazy matches. He just got inducted to the Hall of Fame of CZW. He's like, he was on Lucha Underground. He happened to be by that afternoon when we were working out some of our stuff. He was staying in the gym because they have apartments there too. And he pops down. And he's just like, what are you thinking of doing? And I'm telling him, he's like, oh, yeah, you could do this. If you get up high enough, you get this, that, and the other thing. It's going to suck, but it's not going to be any permanent damage.
So, I mean, do you aim for the flats of the chairs? Do you aim for the tops of
your
the seat
backs? Your hope is almost torpedo into the chairs.
Because you went into them fairly flat, it looked like.
Foreshadowing, I did not do it properly.
Oh! I'm sorry, man.
No. I'm joking. No, I didn't do it as well as... Okay.
You're standing here, so I figured all went to plan. No,
let's just say...
I walked in on Monday being like, bro, how are you walking?
Of all the things, like, worst case scenario, I did worst case scenario.
Oh.
So my hope was... get over, get past the first row of chairs, and almost kind of dive feet first so my feet hit, and then my body will hit, and all the chairs will crumble with me.
So you slide into it.
And honestly, people have done that. Actually, in a match later on that night, there was a crazy stack of chairs. A guy went through it off the top of a ladder, and I'm like, how did it feel? He goes, honestly, it's like it cradles you. The chairs did. So it's not as awful as actually just hitting. It breaks the fall. But the fear is landing flat, full impact on the top of a chair.
Yeah.
So I'm so now it's go time, and I'm like, I got to commit. Mind you, I've never taken a back body drop other than landing onto a crash pad, which is like those stunt.
So
pads.
Like, really? Not even in the ring.
Not even in
so
the ring.
So this is your first time, and you're going to do it over concrete and a bunch of chairs.
Yes,
my man.
Yes,
my man.
So I'm like, time to go.
You know,
it's that go moment, right? So I go, I post, I fly over him. And I'm like, as I'm flying, I have this moment of, I think this is going to be okay. Ah! my mid-back
hit right on a chair back.
The top of the chair. And I mean, you watch the video. If you go watch it in slow motion, great. If not, like, really, it's quick. At the time, it felt like I fully just stood there and, like, the weight.
It looked to me like you just kind of went right through him.
And I think that's pretty much what happened. So I caught the top. But then the momentum got me through where it wasn't anything serious.
Right.
Nice. So it hurt like a mother effer when it happened. Ugh. By the end of the match,
you didn't even feel it anymore.
The thing that hurt the most was the Canadian Destroyer I did outside of the ring, where I get on his back and I flip over him and I pile drive him.
Yeah.
The impact of a 200-pound man on your body as you're doing that onto your ass, onto the ground.
It's bad.
It's bad.
Sucks. So how's your tailbone feel?
Fine now.
Oh, okay.
Honestly, dude, when that happened, though, and it hurt, the pain went away once I started hearing, holy yes.
Yeah.
It's that adrenaline. Like, we're talking about,
right?
During that, while you're wrestling, it's so cathartic, all problems go away. The only problem I have in my head is...
you're in that moment.
I'm in the
you
zone.
You are part of it, dude.
And that match was one of the most in-the-zone matches I've ever had, because I had good chemistry with the guy I was working with, because him and I trained together
it
all the time.
It was cool. I mean, watching the highlight clips, I mean, I was just sitting there
I was super proud. I can't wait to post the whole match.
You know, I was sitting there thinking,
that'll
like...
be fun to watch.
Like, dude...
It's on Twitch, if people want to go...
Is it?
Twitch.tv/321battle.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But it's the full thing. I want to get just my match itself. I think I'm going to pop that on YouTube and
cool,
just put it on
man.
My own thing so people will watch.
You know, because Rev and I have been here kind of since the beginning.
And I'll put that music video, the Bruiser Brody one, on our Mixed Guest page at some point. I'll throw it on today, so
but
be on the lookout.
I'm literally watching it going, Jesus, Steve's getting... really good at this.
Thank you.
Like, that's what I was sitting there watching. I was like, oh, Steve put up a wrestling vid. So immediately I'm going to watch.
Yep.
And then within seconds, I'm like, dude, he's getting good at this. And the chair drop thing is like in the middle of the vid. It's not at the very beginning.
It's closer to the beginning.
Well,
but
there was a bunch of ring punches and stuff going on.
There was something building to it. It was about a minute in.
And like him working your knee and all this other stuff. But
yep, then it became all about the knee. That's why I'm hobbling a lot throughout the video.
Yeah.
Like, you'll see, like, I'm selling the knee the whole time.
Yeah.
But I'm watching all that. I'm like, man, Steve's getting really good at this. And the next thing I knew, I'm watching you get thrown through a pile of chairs. I'm like, dude, Steve's getting really good at this.
Dude, one of the
it was cool.
But it was cool,
man. It was really cool, dude.
The cool thing was also, for me personally, it was like, A, I got to work with the guy that I truly have a closest bond with, which is Officer Cooper. Him and I train together all the time. Like, that's my homie. Like, that's the guy I'm closest with. Him and his girlfriend, Roya, who I've had a match with, too, which has been really cool. But so Cooper and I have had this one-on-one match because it just meant that much to us. Because
right.
we put so much time in together. And then our ref is Aubrey, who is now on All Elite Wrestling.
Yeah.
But, like, she started a little bit before me, but around the same time. So we've been on this journey together. So I have. I didn't know that until that day, that I was not only going to get to wrestle my closest friend, but the referee was also one of my closest buddies. So it was like this really powerful thing. And then I find out right before we wrestle, two of the guys that trained me came down to watch me and other guys that they helped train. Because we have our main trainer that's part of 3-2-1, but then we have two other trainers that I go to, Ethan HD and Mike Santiago.
Oh, Ethan's awesome.
The American Guns. Yeah. Both of them are great. They came down, and that was pretty cool. And then I found them. I had to find them after the match and be like, this kid's either they're going to look at me and shake their head like, man.
Were they stoked for you?
We should stop training you.
They had to have been stoked for you.
Both of them like looked at me with eyes wide open and just like, that was really good.
Dude.
And I was like, yes. And then Mike and I were joking. I'm like, he's like, how'd that feel on the chair thing? I'm like, I feel like I didn't get high enough. And he goes, no, you got too high.
You were way up in the air, bro. Yeah. I watched it, was like, what?
Yeah. I'm like, really? He goes, dude, you got really high, but you didn't go far out. You went up.
And
straight down instead of going up and out. And I'm like, I was so focused on not going, like not being too low, that I didn't think about the pushing out. So I didn't hurt that bad. And honestly, the next day, the only thing that would hurt is if I like put a lot of pressure on my back. Like if I, like when we went to Ring of Honor at the Showwear Center, when I'd sit on those chairs and I put my back against the chair, I'm like,
kind of hurt a little bit.
It's a little, it's like a bruise.
Yeah.
But to walk out with that little damage and that violent of a moment, it was, I was pretty pumped.
It was a thing to behold, man. I mean,
I'm not planning on doing a lot.
I didn't expect to see that.
No,
you know?
I did not expect to see that.
And that was the goal. I want to create, I always love making moments in anything I do, but like with wrestling, I want to create at least one moment per match where people are like, I did not expect Migs to do that.
Dude.
And that was that moment.
Yeah.
And the best part was, a lot of people were talking about that at the Ring of Honor show, which was hilarious because I went with Cooper and people were looking at us like, wait a second, yesterday you're breaking people's brains, dude. Kayfabe, bro. I'm like, now we're cool. We respect each other now. We went to war against each other. But it was just cool. Like one of the wrestlers who's a really good wrestler in town, he pulled me aside and goes, since when has Steve Migs become the hardcore wrestler of the Pacific Northwest? Because of my last two matches.
And, oh, gosh,
and I'm like, I'm like, don't get used to that, man. I got to tone it down. Like, I think I've made it very known that I'm taking this serious and I'm not here just playing wrestling. Like a radio guy that just wants to, you know, get a couple.
That's got to be established, man.
It's
got to be established.
I hope. If not,
it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a guy
We're establishing it right now, brother.
Dude, like, not familiar with and don't follow, right, Rev?
Yeah, I mean, you know
a lot more about this stuff than I do. And I watched that video and went, Jesus Christ.
It was fun. Oh, no, dude. I did the exact same thing.
Whoa. Like, you know, like, yeah, so I've got to think, you know, if I'm an outsider and I'm having that response, people that are they're fans, truly fans of, I've got to be watching that like, you know, man, Steve's legit.
And that's the one of the things, too. It's like, it's not even so much, oh my God, it's Steve doing this. It's the, oh my God, he's willing to go and do this.
He's legit.
Yeah, he is.
Doing it.
It's not half-hearted. I couldn't believe he could do it. It's like, no, wow, he's doing it.
Yeah.
And he's going for it. And he's being that guy. And that's the coolest part about that. I mean, it ties into everything we've been talking about for like
the
last hour.
I'm committed to it.
Yeah.
And anything I do, I'm committed to making sure I do it to the best of my abilities. And I'm not going to waste somebody's money who paid to come see me wrestle by me
that's
just kind of doing a headlock and maybe a body slam is like
rest
the most, you know what I mean? Like
into arm bar.
Stuff that he could do
into
with me
bar.
With no one risking getting hurt.
Right.
Well, like, actually, I'd probably still get hurt, but still.
But I don't ever plan on getting back body dropped into a bunch of chairs again. I'm glad to say I was the first to do it there, and I'll never do it again.
See, being
I feel like
firsties,
I dodged a bullet.
Yeah, being firsties, you don't ever have to do it again.
Nope, I set the tone. Be like, yo, Migs did that already. I remember my first back body drop into chairs.
Ooh, that sounds like a Twitter verified line right there.
No, that's right. I'm not a heel in this place.
Yeah.
I'm humbled and honored that I get
that's
to be
right.
the first
there you go.
To be back body dropped
there you go.
Into a pile of chairs.
That's cool, man. And you know, dude, like, it's not it's really circling back, but it's one of those things like with your folks or even with Sid, it's a matter of sometimes just people don't communicate that well. Like, your parents love you. They just want the best for you.
You're right.
And that's not...
No, I know you're right.
You know what I mean?
That's like, why I can't be too mad at them. But they're still off my Facebook.
They are not communicating with you properly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're not saying, like, look, it just scares us. Or, look, you know, as an adult, it's not the kind of thing we picture you'd be doing. Even that comment's like, thanks.
Right.
You know.
But the whole, when are you going to grow up?
It's just a total failure in communication is really what it, dude, trust me, as a guy that has spent his life trying to be a musician, you know, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, well, when are you going to get a real job? It's like, man.
This is a real job, bitch.
You know, I've poured my life. Dude, had I gone to medical school, I would have graduated and become a surgeon.
Paging Dr. Glenn.
Almost 20 years ago. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I may not be successful in your eyes, but this has been a life's work, and man, I've touched some people's lives, and so I'm very successful.
Dude, you know? I don't disagree with
one
bit.
You're doing something amazing.
You can
amazing,
look back on your life whenever that time comes where, like, whatever, and you have a moment of clarity to be able to look back on it. I always have said, look, I mean, yeah, I want to be able to pay my bills and live comfortably, but I'm never going to look back on my life being like, man, I saved that money, and that was really cool. That was, dude, babe, let's hold hands and reminisce on all those times we saved money.
We were having that, Castle and I were having that conversation just a couple weeks, right? I know. Yeah. All those nights we played it safe and watched Friends.
Right.
Right?
Like that time we just watched the news and didn't go out.
Yeah, dude.
Like my parent.
Ryan and I were talking about, dude, we were talking about, like, life regrets. And he's like, man, my only real regret is that I didn't, you know, buy a home or buy real estate sooner. And I laughed. I'm like, bro. And when, as I laid it out, like, his eyes just got bigger and bigger. I was like, there was a time in my life when everything was paid for outright. Mm-hmm. Every car, everything was owned. Tawny and I's rent was $500 a month.
Mm-hmm.
I was bringing home just shy of $50,000 a year. And she was bringing home just shy of $40,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And Tawny, I love you, honey, at the time was like, we should buy a place. And I'm like, are you crazy? I don't want a $200,000 anchor around my neck.
Yeah, right. No, I thought that whole thing my entire life.
I remember I could have bought a house just north of Seattle, like in the Fremont area.
Oh, my house.
No. And I said no to it, be like, that thing is $250,000. I don't want to spend more than $200. Back when I bought my house in Linwood.
And
if I would have had that house, I'd still be living in that house.
Yeah.
And it was it's probably now like $1 million house.
Oh, easy.
Right.
In learning what I've learned,
fat house,
learning what I've learned since Tawny and I bought our home is part of why I'm kicking myself so hard. Because wow. But
what are you gonna do?
I think, you know, I was telling Castle, I'm like, dude, you know, back then, you know, I could have bought a couple Coke machines. I could have bought a few ATMs. I could have set myself up to have mailbox money. I could have made some investments that, you know, if remain stable, kick me $400 a month for the rest of my life.
Yep.
And what I did was anyone within 10 feet of me wanted for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Drugs, alcohol, clothing, parties, musical equipment.
Yeah, there you go.
It was on me, dude. Oh, you got a ticket? I'll pay it for you, man. Oh, dude, I'll pay you back.
Oh,
I was like that.
Wow.
I did that for many. Like, dude, I'll pay you back. I'm like, dude, it's not a loan. Just take it. Because at the time, I had never been so well off.
Yeah.
And so anyone within 10 feet of me wanted for nothing. I just, dude, I can't afford it. Dude, I got you covered. I'll buy you drinks. I'll get you dinner, man. I got you.
Yep.
And it felt after living in Florida and sleeping on the floor and not even having a bed.
Florida.
Coming here with a van and like a prison-style cot and the clothes on my back. I mean, I had nothing for so long that when Tawny and I had my, it was just like whatever anyone wanted was on them. And like, I look back at that now, it's like, dude, we could have bought a condo or two or three.
Oh, I know.
No problem.
Well, Glenn, if you want to keep in the whole in the housing market, our neighbors are going to be selling pretty soon. You can be my neighbor.
I mean, I'm already buying. I look at Sean, Window Pane's old drummer, Sean Morrison.
Yeah.
His wife, Pam, sharp lady, works at Boeing, but she bought several properties up in Everett, condos and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd think, why don't you go buy condos in Everett? Well, now Payne Field has opened up to domestic and some international flights.
Oh, yeah.
And she now rents out those condos as Airbnbs.
Yeah.
And they're making a fortune.
Well, and that's,
they're making a fortune. And I'm sitting here like, dude, my wife was so much smarter than me, even when we were in our 20s.
Yeah.
She
I should have listened to her.
Well, what's she doing with a bum like me, man?
Riding around on her motorcycle, man.
Oh, yeah,
looks like she's living her best life on
that's
that one,
right,
dude.
That put a big smile on my face. She's got herself her own hog now.
It is a beautiful. It's my buddy Josh, it was his first bike. And then when he realized he was in love with it, he bought a big bagger. But it's a bagger is one of those big bikes with the big fairing and the huge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
they're
okay.
The big 1,000-pound bikes that you can ride comfortably for, like, it's just a huge motorcycle.
Totally,
it's a really
okay,
nice bike. But his Sportster, and he's a mechanic by trade, so he had done all kinds of cool stuff to it. But it's a 1200, which is the biggest size Sportster you can get as far as the engine goes.
Damn, dude.
So, yeah, it's about a 350-400-pound bike, and it's got a 1200cc engine. So it's, you know, it's no joke. Right, it's a real bike. And, yeah, Josh, that was he sold it to Tawny and I.
That's so cool.
Look at you. You got your little motorcycle gang started.
Well, it's really cool. Well,
that's dude, motorcycle club, Rev.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
As soon as I got mine, she got on the back. We went for a ride, and I think we were like at the third stoplight or something, and she literally hugged me and said, "You realize this is just temporary, right?" As soon as she got on the back of mine, she wanted one of her own. And then you guys saw the video of her learning to ride my
stuff. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Josh.
Duck to water with that, man.
We're dealing with this refi and all this stuff, but you know, we got really, really good news, and we're going to fund now before the end of June.
Nice.
Josh literally was like, "Dude, I trust you. Come get it." And I'm like, "Okay, because we can't pay you yet for like another month, but you know, Tawny and I wanted to ride down to Oregon together to see your parents." He's like, "Dude, come get it."
Nice.
Went over, hung out, had dinner, had some drinks, had an awesome time, and then yeah, her and I rode home, and dude, it was great. Like every stoplight, I'd stop, I'd look over at her to see if she was okay, and just smiling. Just this huge, oh my God, this is so much fun smile. So yeah, Tawny's got herself a Harley Davidson now.
That's awesome, man.
That was kind of the same way when I rode on the Lime scooters.
Yeah?
Lime scooter club.
We're doing a bar crawl with Lime scooters at the end of the month.
Come on, let's start our own Lime scooter club.
I think I kind of want to get in on the bar crawl.
Okay, yeah, okay. So, yeah, June 29th, we're starting at the Flying Boot down in Tacoma.
I'm playing. I'll be over in...
At 1 p.m.?
State Line, Idaho.
Oh, okay, yeah, you'll.
Yeah, no, if I was playing in town, I would be there, but you know,
So Memorial Day weekend, we took the Lime scooters out, and oh my God, they're so much fun.
Are you serious?
They are legitimately the most fun thing I've ever done.
I've been wanting to do one of those really bad.
Is it inexpensive?
Super cheap. It's like, normally, they do surge pricing sometimes, so it'll kind of vary, but it's about 15 cents a minute, and then I think maybe distance as well, but we went for like...
You spent $8, $10, $12.
Yeah.
The time of your life.
It was like $15, and we rode for over an hour, over 3 miles down through downtown Tacoma. Absolutely worth it.
Dude.
It is so much fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
I love them so much.
The LSC, the Lime Scooter Club.
Get down with LSC.
You know me. You'll be our president.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah, dude.
That's awesome, dude. I want to go to Point Rustin. They have sometimes a lot of those scooters are by that park.
Everywhere, yeah.
And the only reason why I haven't done it yet is because my damn wife is a germaphobe and is afraid to touch these things because a million people have touched them and sneezed on them and done all that. I'm like, we got to bring...
True.
Bring some wet wipes.
Put her in one of those weird paint
germs.
Yeah. You see the movie Outbreak?
Yes. Oh yeah.
Just put her in one of those chemical suits.
Yes.
Bubble
yeah.
Bubble boy.
You having fun, honey?
This is awesome. Let's go down to the beach. Okay. There's no monkeys down there, are there?
No, there's
no
monkeys.
So. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Don't worry about that. They don't know what Ebola is.
Yeah. Give me a kiss.
That'd be fun. Those would be fun. Why don't we do a couple emails and text messages and then we gotta get wrapping it. You can leave us a voicemail at 253-271-4787. That's also where you can text us and email themigscast@gmail.com. And a couple of people were wondering, and I believe it's going to go up today, the match that I had with Pitfall Jones, the Last Man Standing match, where it's local celebrity Steve Miggs.
Right.
I believe the full match is going to be posted on Without a Cause Wrestling's YouTube page. So just search Without a Cause Wrestling or go to their Facebook page. They'll be sharing it there as well. And I'll be sure to share it too. But you get to watch me get hit in the head with some video cassettes. That's a lot of fun. Just don't share it with my parents because they clearly love professional wrestling.
Yeah, right.
We got a text that says, "Please give the mighty Glenn a mega hug for me.
Aww.
I had a chance to sit down with headphones and listen to Glenn's new record. Holy jeez, was I blown away. What a great album. My only complaint, it wasn't a double album because I was left craving more. Thanks for your hard work. I know it was a lot of work to get this album made, but I promise to buy any future Glenn albums that he produces. # throwing money at Glenn."
Thank you. That's amazingly cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's rad.
That's very awesome.
Who did they? Who was that from? Did they say?
It's just a text.
Well, I love you for that.
From Texter Guy.
Thank you. Whoever you are, thank you.
Texter Guy.
As we were discussing earlier in the show, I was remarkably insecure and nervous about making this move, but everyone's been extraordinarily positive, and it means so much to me. You have no idea. Thank you.
Email from Mitchell. And oh, big CD release show. When is it again?
July 12th at the Crocodile.
July 12th, Crocodile. Nice. It's you. Mm-hmm. Is it Gerald?
So it's Stoic FB and Woodshed. And then I was finally able to announce today 10 Miles Wide.
10 Miles Wide.
Wow. So 10 Miles Wide had, they were playing the Tractor the 31st, which I was at that show. It was like a family reunion. It was an amazing event. Saw so many amazing people down there. It was just a great night. But then they had a show the very next night, Saturday the 1st in Portland. So out of respect for them, I didn't announce that they were on my bill until morning. So you can catch 10 Miles Wide, me, Stoic FB, who's in the studio now, tracking their new record. Not supposed to say that I got to hear a little bit of a snippet, and it's incredible, but I never heard that. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen.
No, this is all imaginary. This whole podcast is not really happening.
None of this is happening.
Head,
I'm actually
guys.
Still in bed.
My parents actually support me in all my decisions. This is all make them up.
Congratulations.
Yes.
But our boys in Woodshed, and of course, their new record rips one's heard that. So it's going to be a great bill. That's July 12th at the Croc. Tickets are on sale now. Please come join us. It's my premiere show here in Seattle.
Full band.
Yeah, no one's really seen this yet. A few people that went to a surprise show I did over in West Seattle at Parliament have seen it.
Yeah, you poised that as an acoustic show, became a full-on plugged-in band show.
Yeah, so there was like there was like 40, 50 people there, and the response, the whole room started clapping in unison. We had a wonderful response.
Nice.
So yeah, it's the debut of the whole thing, so please join us July 12th. Thank you for this shameless moment of self-promotion.
We got an email from Mitchell, says, hey guys, I want to thank you for doing the Migscast. I listen to many podcasts and have for a long time. And yours is the only show that I haven't missed an episode on in years. Nice. I try my best to save your shows for when I'm having a really bad day because they inevitably cheer me up. Steve, Glenn, Rev, I feel like I'm hanging out with good friends every week when I listen to y'all, and I'd love to actually meet you guys someday. Rock on, keep kicking ass and making people smile. How do you guys feel about Slipknot last time? I asked about Sevenfold, got some cool responses, so I'm curious to hear what you think about another favorite band of mine. Just to keep it in the back pocket, Mitchell, October 12th, I believe we're going to be doing a Migs Fest. Mm-hmm. That would mean that all of us will be there. So.
We got to talk about that, too.
Okay. But, yeah. We might not be doing a Migs Fest.
No, we're doing a Migs Fest. But I think I've got the lineup in hand, and cool. I wanted to bounce all that off of you.
So that will be some stuff we'll be talking about. Plus, Bruiser Brody's got some shows coming up, including, when are we playing?
Dude, we are playing June 28th. The Tractor June 28th.
When are we
with Jericho Hill, and what is the... So Travis Brocht, our singer, his son Tristan...
Who's... Also
fronts
talented.
A band. I believe the band's called Solar Tone.
Yes.
Am I correct?
Yes.
It's Solar Tone.
He's got
premiere show. And Tristan, is a serious talent, just like his dad. And that's going to be a cool thing to be.
That's going
to
be
a part of. That's going to be
the
Tristan's
28th?
Premiere show. The 28th at the Tractor.
Yep. Perfect. I can write that down on my.
Yeah. Oh, so there's a way to meet all three of us. We're all going
to
be at the Tractor.
Come to the Tractor.
Come hang out with us.
It's going
to
be a great show.
I'm a fan of Tristan
amazing
because
bands.
First time I saw him, he said I reminded him of Brad Wilk, my drumming style. So I was just like, I'm not.
So, thank we
you.
Are now friends.
named
thank you.
One of my top five favorite drummers of all time, the drummer of Rage Against the Machine and Audioslave. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that.
We can be friends.
You are good in my book.
Solar Tones. I got to see the one. They have sort of a video single they put out, and it's really cool. It's a bit eclectic, reminding me of some Incubus maybe in a way, but it's really, really a cool, unique thing they've got going on, and I'm excited for people to see it, man. So
me too. I'm actually pumped to see those guys, and it's a cool moment. When get to be a part of something where Travis gets to be on a show with his son, whoever thought that would happen?
And his son's premiere show, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's...
Special.
That's really special stuff.
So if you're
That's
coming,
cool.
make sure you get there at the very beginning because we're all going to be there rocking out to Tristan's band,
Big
Solar Tone, and we want it to be that moment for them, like not like a bunch of people trickling in after their. You know, sometimes the opening slot sucks.
Oh, dude.
So let's make sure that the place is packed for them.
I've done shows where we were like in the. I'll never forget the first time we played the Whiskey.
Yeah.
The room was
Whiskey.
The room was packed, and it was a 3-band bill, and we were in the middle, and I'm like, this is going to be incredible. And the first band played their set, and they packed their gear and left and took all their fans with them. And we replayed the Whiskey a Go-Go to, I don't know, there was a maybe five, sorry, I almost forgot to count the sound engineer. There was five people. And it was wall-to-wall before that. I was like, this is going to rule. And they left, and my hopes and dreams left with them.
One of Peter Parker's only tours, I think we did two, one where we went to the whole West Coast. Brutal. And I was so excited. We got to play with my friend Carla. She was in a band called A Whole Lot of Rosies, which was an all-girl AC/DC tribute band in L.A.
Oh, nice.
And
yeah.
Carla was she was so awesome. Great bassist. She's actually originally from here. She was on Temptation Island, of all things, the original episodes.
Whoa.
Right back in the day. Yeah. That's how we got to know each other. Yeah. I was very tempted by her, but not. We were just friends.
Never went to the island.
I wish. No, I'm just kidding.
McFlurry.
Get that stoop waffle. I hope she never hears this. Anyways, we were really pumped because they had a huge following. This is like at the height of, I think Hell's Bells was just blowing up, and they were blowing up on the in the California area. And we played some show in L.A. I don't know what club it was, but it was packed.
And you're like, yes!
Yes! And we were on second, they were on third, the headliners, right? And we were, they were on before us. And there was another band after us, and then us. But they're like, don't worry, people are going to stick around. Uh-huh. We told them, and they were on stage saying, we have our friends from Seattle, stick around for them, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, great. Next band goes on, place is still packed. They were the worst band I've ever heard in my entire life.
Packed.
And they were terrible.
How very Los Angeles.
As they were playing, people started leaving.
Oh, no.
They drove them out.
Yes. And I've never cried because of a bad show. I was crying. Like, tears were coming down my eyes because I'm like, I can't believe. I was so angry.
Yeah.
I was like, we had a packed room. Why couldn't we have gone on after them? But there was something about the club and, you know, it was all politics. But I was just like, we've been through so much hell. Like, my van, the transmission blew. I spent every dollar in my pocket to get that transmission fixed while we're in California.
Three people.
It was maybe five because a whole lot of Rosies, they stuck around, which was nice of them.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it was devastating.
Been there, bro.
Damn.
Devastating.
I have really been there.
I was so mad.
I got so wasted that night. More funny one when windowpane, when we first started, dude, we first started in Western Maryland. And we played a bar over in West Virginia called the Woodland Inn.
Yeah.
And we showed up, we loaded in, and that was in these off-market clubs, you carried your whole PA and light show. We came in, we brought in our lights, we set up our PA, set up front of house mix position, sound check, the whole works. And we were slotted to do three sets. And we were a new band in West Virginia. And no one came. I mean,
oh man,
no one.
That's the worst.
It was the owner and the bartender.
Mother effers.
And they were like, the owner was like, look, man, dude. He's like, you guys, you can go ahead and pack up. And we were like, you know what?
We're here.
We drug all this stuff out.
We're going to play.
We'll play for you.
Band practice.
Unless you want to go home. And he's like, nah, man.
Okay, I was be like, no, actually, I gotta go. Home.
Yeah, like, guys, I'm out. Yeah, get the hell. That would have been really bad.
No,
but
like,
we threw down for 3 hours, straight. Played our entire three sets for him and the bartender. They sat there on bar stools and watched us, and we threw down for them.
Dude, that's badass.
So that, if you ever wonder where my work ethic comes from. There's an example. Like, almost anyone on the show would be like, this sucks. Let's pack our gear and get out of here. It's like, dude, we lugged all this stuff in here. Do you want to hear us play? You know?
Yeah, right?
How cool.
Right?
They were like, yeah. And they probably loved it.
Dude, you know, what was cool was, despite that abysmal failure, they booked us again.
They performed.
Because they saw they saw you perform, so they knew that you could do it.
Yeah. They booked us again, and we were able to get some people out the second time, and then slowly it grew, and the next thing you know, we were packing clubs, but you have to start at zero and fight.
Literally at zero, man.
I thought just great shows were handed to you no matter how good you are.
Right.
Yeah,
because
how
it's about talent.
Yes.
That's not about anything.
No. I'm looking at the clock. It's noon. I got to get running.
No.
But I there's still a lot of emails. We'll try and do a bunch
of them. Sorry, guys.
Oh, next week we have a dilemma.
Oh, okay. What's up?
Oh, yeah.
So the president of our entire radio company,
like the biggest
the
person,
big dude from Philadelphia, is coming to town to speak to all of us.
You
right?
You guys don't want me in the building. Is that what's up?
Yes. But here's the thing. Typically, when those things happen, we still either I just bail and I don't go to them, or we just still do what we do and just act like as if we didn't know. But they're going to have the meeting right next to the room that we do the podcast at 11.
You can't be in here doing a show while he's out there.
Right. That would look really bad. So if you're cool with it, I mean, we'll still do the podcast, but it'll be a short one. We'll just start as close to 10 o'clock as we can and just go right until like 10:58. We have a couple minutes to just tear everything down.
Yeah.
And it'll just be a shorter one, but we'll still do one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And sweet. We want to
maybe we should just crash the meeting and then get some free food.
Yeah.
I'll like that.
Yeah.
I'll take the free food. Yeah. No one's going to look at me weird.
No, you should say, and you should be the guy that asks all the questions.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, bro. I've been here for 3 years.
Looking at me shaking his head, you know, and I'm asking all the questions and complaining, and I'm the one guy that's not even an employee.
I can't watch The Office without getting weirded out. I would have to. I would get up and literally walk out of the room if Glenn just raised his hand and started asking questions.
What if we
wouldn't be able to handle it?
Can you talk about our health care benefit package?
Right.
Dude, all you guys, only the staff here would get the joke.
Yeah, but if we had
probably think I was an employee.
If we had everyone from the staff tell us like there are serious issues with the company,
and I asked
and wrote them all down and gave them to you, and he's like, any questions? And you just start asking all the bombs, you're like pipe bomb after pipe bomb after pipe bomb.
Would I get in trouble?
How could you don't work here?
I could be asked not to return.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should pass on this.
Like,
yeah,
would Hair doing Club the laugh cast? About it?
I mean,
maybe in 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then I can't have that, dude. So you guys, he has to fire. Me, he can just say, don't come back.
And then I think after that, I think the mixed cast would just be happening in Steve's house.
Yeah, we'd have to be like taking it offline, as they say in the business world.
Right. We'd be doing it from the bar in my house.
We have to go rogue.
All right, well, we'll just keep it the way it is. We'll do a quick one.
Like, pump up the volume. We're running around in a Jeep with FCC vans chasing us.
What did you guys do? Don't ask.
I'm so glad we did this podcast. I always love doing it with you guys.
I missed you guys.
And we love everyone who listens. We got some great voicemails, emails. Mama, I know you wrote us and emailed us and voicemailed us. We love you. You know we love you. We'll get to it next week if we have time.
Next week after the show intro, we should just play the voicemail intro.
Yes.
And then just go like that.
And see where we go.
Yep. Yeah. See if we can get everything out of the way. You know what I mean?
Well, honor the people that took the time to contact us.
Yes, because we do appreciate you guys.
Yeah, we really do.
Love all of you. And thanks so much for all the support and spreading the word about the Migscast. Let your friends know about it.
Yeah.
Do all the stuff that you're supposed to do with, like, leave good reviews and high ratings
stuff and
all
things.
That crap.
Thanks for being with us.
And enjoy yourself a Stroopwafel.
Yeah! It's
available starting tomorrow until August. I want Stroopwafel reviews
and
on the Migscast.
And if you see Steve eating one, be like, bro, I saw you on 167 eating a slice of apple.
Yes, or a cup of fruit. Stay positive and stop diming me out, bitches.